Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. My name is Josue Cardona, and with me is Kelly Dunlap.
Hi.
And Kelly is not feeling all that great right now. I will tell you why in a second, but first I wanted to tell you this, Kelly. Some of the best advice that I ever received, or ever read, nobody ever told me this directly, but was that when thinking about like getting excited about a project or something, you know, sometimes you're like, I want to do something and I don't know what to work on or I don't know what to do, that the way to kind of sort that out and figure out what it is that you would be passionate about is to think about the things that make you the happiest and the things that piss you off the most. And I think today we're going to talk about the latter.
I have a lot of feels right now, and I am trying, you know, I am a doctor of clinical psychology. I write academic stuff. I know about examining the data impartially, but I can't even pretend to be impartial about what we're talking about today. So that's going out the window. I accept that. I'm at peace with that. And I guess just putting it out into the universe, this is definitely not scientific impartiality. This is righteous indignation informed by science.
Yeah, this is going to be a reactionary episode. We're going to...
Yes, that's a better way of saying it, actually.
Yeah. And what are we reacting to?
So earlier in May, I think May 7th was the recording date on BBC News, Dr. Philip Zimbardo of the Stanford Prison Experiment fame went on to talk about his upcoming book. And it was super unhappy times for anybody who is under 40 and lives in the real world.
Yep. And to be fair, we haven't read this new book.
I don't think I will. Right? I read reviews and I'm like, nope, I am not spending money to support that. I am not going to waste my brain cells on that. And I do want to get across how hard it is for me to even say that, because for anybody who got their degree in psychology or even took a psychology class, you probably know that name. You know the Stanford Prison Experiment. You know this guy is kind of the almost psychology royalty. You know, when you name off all the psychologists you can mention, it's usually, you know, Freud and, you know, Zimbardo and Bandura and Milgram. You know, those are the big names. Pavlov, those are the names that come up. And so to see him in the light that we did on this last week, it hurts. But on the other hand, I feel like it's a really good reminder that people are just people. And one epic, awesome thing you did does not mean that you are set for the rest of your life.
And also, just because he's professor emeritus at Stanford University and was responsible for one or two things that have made him really pop. I mean, I know he has like a distinguished career, but still, that doesn't mean that his word is law and that he necessarily knows what he's talking about. And it also means that just there's always different viewpoints. And there's, I think we're going to talk a lot about research today and some of the issues there. But his book, I want to try to be as fair as possible before I start ranting. And his book is called Man Disconnected: How Technology Has Sabotaged What It Means to Be Male. And now, when you mentioned that this interview happened this weekend, I didn't know he was coming out with a new book, but I mentioned to you, oh, that's like that TED talk that he did a couple years back.
Yeah.
And I looked it up, and it was 2011. It was called The Demise of Guys. Did you watch the video?
Unfortunately.
And that one was only 5 minutes. It was him. I think he got a standing ovation at the end. I don't know if it was complete, but there were a lot of people standing up. And it was really quick, just to the point. He cracked a few jokes. And essentially, what he said is what he said in this interview today. So he's been saying the same thing for years. And I even, in preparation, because again, I was so bothered by a lot of this stuff that I started looking at some other videos and things and interviews with him. And I kept seeing certain themes pop up over and over again, which is like a very conservative point of view, very traditional point of view on a lot of things. And anyway, so let's, where do you want to start? Should we start with the interview? Do you want to say anything else before we get started?
I think my strong feels and your very logical, thought out arguments will make more sense in the context of the video. So why don't we roll that beautiful footage? I think that will make me feel less crazy, I hope. Maybe. Or more. I don't know.
I'll try to be as Spock-like as possible.
I won't.
A US psychologist called Dr. Philip Zimbardo. He's here, along with gamers Nick Whitcroft and Sam McKenna and Julian Benson. And they're already debating away. Welcome, all of you. And also with us in Oxford is Dr. Andrew Shabilsky from the Oxford Internet Institute, which looks at the impact the internet has on society. Gentlemen, welcome. Philip Zimbardo, then, your book is Man Disconnected. What's your theory?
It's not a theory. It's an alarm.
I just want to stop it right there. Like, just the way he started. That bugged me.
It's not a theory.
I'm here to alarm everybody. I'm here to tell you what's what. Oh. Any other comments?
It's just such a pretentious way to start something. Like, you really started off on not a very good foot, considering what you're about to dive into.
Oh, I know. It's not a theory. It's an alarm. Ugh. So it's like, not only is what I'm telling you absolutely true, it's alarming. So,
you should be scared, so read my book. Okay.
We're sending an alarm that there's a crisis in the making in the UK, in America, in Poland, other countries, where young boys are failing academically, they're failing socially, having no friends, and they're failing sexually. And that's a killer triad. And what we point out is that video games and watching video games to excess in social isolation, and now watching freely available pornography in excess in social isolation, is a killer combination that is contributing to this inadequate school performance. Boys are dropping out of school, doing poorly when they're there. And what confounds the whole thing is a large percentage of boys are growing up for the first time without a father in home.
Okay.
Because of divorce, separation, fathers traveling, living in other countries.
All right. Well, Nick,
so
Sam, and Julian.
It's a grim picture.
It's a grim picture, you say. Nick.
I say.
He says.
Okay. So let's go back in the way, way back old timing machine to 1950, where these ideas are relevant. I'm sorry. I'm trying. Okay.
Which one?
All of them. So the idea that, well, first, the first thing that really bothered me about that statement was as the gamer, where it is video games and pornography are equated as the same thing. And that is a huge problem because that's the era of false equivalence. Just because two things seem like they should go together doesn't mean that they do. And there is a large body of literature about pornography and how it can have detrimental effects. And there's a large body about video games and how they don't have effects or detrimental effects or otherwise. So, but he's lumping them together. And I feel like adding these scare words of whether they're failing in school and they have no friends and, you know, lack of fathers, like all these warning trigger alarm words are just being compacted into this one statement without any kind of actual meat of anything.
So again, we haven't read the book, right? And just based on that presentation, right, he's lumping that together. And if you look at some of the other stuff, what his argument is, what his alarm is that people, that these are things that are meant to excite, specifically young boys, right? And so that they are exciting. And he seems to put them in this sole category, like nothing else in the world is or ever has been as exciting as these two things. And that's kind of weird.
Or just the idea that there must therefore be a relationship between boys, quote unquote, failing and these video games, pornography, and lack of parents in the household. Or lack of a father figure, which he does come back to again and again. And that bothers me because we'll get into the gender part of it later. But just the statement that video games and pornography are hand in hand, that they are the same thing, is just, it's wrong. It's empirically and scientifically wrong.
And he hasn't even tried to explain it yet. And And I do want to touch on the gender thing, because again, the name of the title of the book is how the subtitle is How Technology Has Sabotaged What It Means to Be Male. And his other, you know, the whole original thing was The Demise of Guys. And as a guy, it bugs me that there's this supposed universal, you know, definition of what a male or what masculinity is. His point of view is so
archaic.
Not just binary, right? Like, not even just there's male and female on extremes, but like, to be a man is one very specific thing. And he doesn't really touch any examples here, but he does in that TED video. Mm-hmm. And it is just like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, what do I have to do to be a man? You know, it's like, oh, you need to have all these checkboxes. And according to him, if you do these two things in particular, and in isolation and in excess, we'll get into the excess part in a second, then you are not a man, right? This is transforming you. It is rewiring your brain in such a way that you are not what used to be considered a man very long ago, when I guess he, you know, was able to define that and people listened.
When you drug your woman by her hair back into the cave and you beat her over the head with a club.
That's correct. Yes. That means that's being a man.
So that bothers me a lot, because that's damaging to both men and women, to perpetuate mm-hmm. this idea of masculinity as a monolithic, absolute imperative. So you either are or you are not. And if you're not, then you are something bad. And I think that really comes across in his TED video, where he lists the reason that, quote unquote, boys are failing. So they talk about dropout rates, which when he compares them to the dropout rates of women, it's not significant. Like, yes, there are more men who drop out than women, but it's not a staggering number. I would doubt those numbers even reach significance. He also points out that there's more women going to college than men, as if that is somehow means that men are failing because women are surpassing them in this particular area. Or he even mentions at some point that the reason that men are failing socially and sexually is because they don't know how to interact with women, because video games have taken that away and women don't want a video game nerd. Which, I just, like, the assumptions there are so rigid and strict and stupid.
And dangerous.
And above all, dangerous to both men and women.
Yeah, there's so much potential for harm there, you know? It's like, gamers are now getting attacked, like, on it. And not, this isn't brand new, he's been spouting this for years, but it's like, there's a whole new thing. Like, you're not only, like, a geek or a nerd or this or that or whatever, you're also not a man. Didn't you know that? Yeah.
And in American society, at least, saying a male, someone who identifies as male, is not, quote unquote, a man, is one of the most damaging things you can do to them. So, I mean, when you think about all the words that are meant to demasculinate somebody or to make them feel bad about themselves, they're all female words. So if you want a bleeped version, this is where you're going to want to bleep it out. So bitch or cunt, I'm going to take that word back. You know, that's another one. Or
hey, as long as you say them and I don't, yeah, I think we're safe.
Pussy? Mm-hmm. Or stop being such a girl. You throw like a girl. You're crying like a girl. You know, these are all things that are used against men to make them feel bad. To emasculate them is to compare them to women. And that's what he's doing. Here's one of the most famous psychologists in the world espousing the idea that if you do not meet these rigid criteria for manliness, then you are not a man.
And again, just trying to define it, period. Because in this particular thing, it's just like the name, like saying masculinity, right? Saying that it's rewiring people to not be what they're supposed to be is what he's saying, you know? And that's just whatever term you use to try to put down someone who identifies as male, all of a sudden you're defining it so rigidly that there's no, like, at that point, it's also like an idealized version, right? You know? And it's like, well, there's no room for these other things, because it's not even like these are the results of the gaming and the pornography and they are bad. It's like they make you less of this and therefore it is bad.
Yeah. Oh. You're either Clint Eastwood or you're nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to the credit of the gamers on the panel, they had a lot more restraint than I did.
Oh, and to be clear, these guys, there's no there's absolutely no credentials here. The three of them are just identified as gamers.
There are three gamers.
Yeah, yes. Not even like a game designer, not even a pro player, nothing.
Nope.
Just three guys. it looks like, and it's almost like they took three guys from the studio, you know, like who work in the back or something. And they're like, hey guys, anybody here play video games? Yeah, I do. Okay, you identify as a gamer? Yeah. Okay, come on over. And them, like, they actually give him a run for his money. But yeah, let's continue. And how about that the grim situation? You know, I'm glad that the reporter was like, what's a grim situation according to you? Like, right off the bat, she was trying to normalize the whole thing.
Yeah, and she did, throughout the interview, she does a really good job of balancing people talking. Although, yeah. I think Andrew does get a bit carried away. I was very happy because he had, like, his geek research flag flying, which made me very happy. But, yeah, he might have dominated the conversation a little bit. But, we'll get to that later, so let's go ahead and dive back in.
Nick, Sam, and Julian all spent many, many hours over the years online. Certainly gaming. I have no idea about free online pornography. But what do you say to Philip's theory, Julian?
Well, certainly, I think that there are going to be examples of people who do play games in severe isolation and that it almost to a point of an obsession. But then that's not something which is unique to video games. And certainly it's Well, for instance, you could spend hours upon hours watching films, reading books. I mean, some of our greatest writers and directors are people who are socially isolated themselves in their youth.
So just to be clear, that was Philip Zimbardo who asked. Like,
yeah, well, what else is there?
What else is there? Like, what do you mean there's other things? Like, yeah, like, give me an example. And if you see the video, he's kind of smug about it. He's like, yeah, come on. Like, what else? What else? Give me an example. And the guy reacts like, are you serious? Like, I have to actually give you other examples of, like, things that people do in their spare time? You know? That's the way I
have to give
it.
You an example of other things that can be done to excess, like drinking water or anything that you do, shopping or eating, anything you do to excess is excessive. That's what the word means.
And again, three guys who you have no idea who they are, if they have any experience doing this type of thing. Now he's like put on the spot and he's like, I guess like movies, like films, TV, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a perfect answer because duh.
Well, it's the right answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go, boy.
But also, I think that your description of video games is it's an out-of-date stereotype. I mean, for instance, there simply aren't people playing in that manner anymore. Like, it's sort of that there are single-player games and there are people who will play on their own, but there's so many people who play almost exclusively online. There are people who play socially together. There are people who go to watch events together and crowds of thousands of people going to see a game being played live.
But you're specifically saying it's people doing it on their own.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, it's people doing it on, it's boys doing it on their own in their room.
Why doesn't it affect girls in the same way?
Because video games are designed, video games and pornography are designed for guys. That it's excitement, it's the aggression, it's the violence. And so there's lots of research that show why girls, in fact, we did a survey in the UK of 67 high school students, and we asked that, and girls say, you know, it's not appealing to us.
I mean, all right, well, let's
it
see
could
what
be,
Sam
but
and Nick
not,
say
it's
as
not
well.
In the way it's currently configured.
Okay, so you are a living legend, okay? And you get put on the spot, and you say, I once did a survey of 67 girls in high school.
I know.
What? Like, why did you even say 67? Like, 67's an impressive number.
It's not bad. I mean, you can run stats on it and you can get significant results. But one study does not make research. It has to be reproducible and it has to have many iterations to make sure that there's something actually there. And
67 is fine if you're talking like a really specific population, like people in this town or in this
yes.
region. He's talking about a whole gender. He represented the entire female gender based on 67 high school students. What age? Where was this?
Oh. Well, high school, I mean, I guess if you wanted to narrow it to high school, that does bring the age gap down, but that's still millions of women around the world, and just generalizing off of that. Then his statement about how, well, video games and pornography are made for men. And I had a really hard time with that statement because, one, I actually agree. Most games that are produced, and I would imagine most pornography too, although I'm not an expert in porn, is generated by males for males. I mean, but you see that in movies, and you see that in books, and you see that in television shows. Like, male stories predominate our media culture, and they always have. So the idea that somehow just because it's made for men means that it does not have an impact on women is just, it kind of boggled my mind.
And if you go back to our ESA episode, you know that the percentage is not as lopsided as he would have you think it is. It was, what, 42%?
Well, that's the amount of women who are playing. He's talking about specifically, oh, I thought he was talking specifically about, like, violent. Maybe I'm getting the porn and the gaming mixed up in my own head. But no, because he's not saying violent video games. He's just saying video games, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just saying video games, period.
So, yeah.
And he described all video games as being, again, very blanket statements that he made. Like, video games are designed, are catered to men. They are exciting, and they are aggressive, and they are violent.
That's where I'm getting that.
Oh, you know, that alone, it wasn't like he asked the girls, do you like aggressive and violent video games? You know? He's just describing video games as a whole, which is a whole other problem, right? That we're constantly struggling with, where there's this assumption that all video games are inherently violent and lead to aggression. And he's just like,
yeah, he just lumps it all together.
Yep. Everybody knows video games
are violent,
you know. And, you know, and I asked these 67 girls, and they were like, you know what? It's not really for me.
And but even, the thing is, even if that is true, even if he asked these girls, and if these girls were representative of all of womankind, and they all, and all girls hated violence and aggression in video games, you have to ask yourself why. It's not that women are inherently more averse to aggression and violence. It's because we tend to be groomed that way. You know, you see a bunch of kids playing. If boys are fighting, you know, boys will be boys. If girls start fighting, oh no, you have to play nice. That's not polite. You know, you need to be quiet and speak softly and speak when spoken to. And there's these really rigid gender structures that are in place. And that is the reason. And not that it's a video game. It's not even that the video games are quote unquote made for boys. It's that there are these very prominent gender stereotypes that he's just playing into and lending more credence to.
And you know, you've mentioned your favorite game is
Halo.
Halo, right? And yeah, you could describe that as a lot of things. But you are female. You identify as female. And even if you were a minority within your group, like his sampling, and again, he never goes into more detail in saying, like, well, you know, 2 out of 8 girls, you know, like 20% or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, they only that many say that they're into it. And again, going into the ESA stats, which are, you know, player statistics, we know that under 18 even is a minority of the video game game playing population.
Yeah,
so the whole thing is like he's coming in so, like, not only not informed, but like ignorant. He's coming in so ignorant to the situation where it's like, why would you even talk about video games if you don't even have player stats to back it up?
And even if he was on point, even if I agreed with everything that he was saying, he's looking at such a small, tiny slice. I mean, he even says this is only for males. Or young males. This is only for young males who play alone. And this is only for young males who play alone and to excess. We're talking 1%, maybe 2% of the entire population. That is, I mean, to me, even if everything is true, then yes, you should be aware of this. But that's something for not national TV, where you go on and talk about how this is a global thing. You know, if this is really the part that you're concerned about, it could be legitimate, but you're presenting it as this huge phenomenon when it's not. And even the gamer at the table next to you, the one who has no title or degree next to his name, who's apparently your average Joe, even he knows that.
The person you're talking about, by the way. The person you're describing.
He talks about the average gamer, and then he refers to the average gamer as a young boy. But we know from our ESA episode, the average gamer is 34. So he just feels so out of touch. And when I got to this point in the video, the first time I played it through, my husband was in the room and he turned and he asked, wow, how old is this video? And I told him it was posted 2 days ago and he couldn't believe it because this argument is so old. Like it's like people who continue to fight and say that cigarettes are healthy for you. It's such an invalid, old, outdated argument. It just makes you look bad.
Like, I haven't read a journal in 30 years, but I'm a psychologist.
Or I've been very self-selecting in my journal reading.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay.
All right. So what do they say next?
What would you say to
Philip? I think I kind of agree with that, actually, because if you're on your own, you're not seeing people. It's very antisocial. Like you said, you know, most of the things today nowadays when you're playing games, they are online with other people. So I'm not so sure about the large numbers that could apply to today. I definitely see.
No, but we are online with other people, but they're not physically present. You're not talking to them. They're just other players in the universe.
You are talking to them, yeah, actually, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. I mean, so... And,
sorry,
go on. Something that's quite interesting as well, I mean, is you talk obviously, I haven't had a chance to read the book. We were kind of contacted fairly short notice, but the blurb kind of goes and talks about not only the negatives, but also the fact that gaming can often be regarded as less demanding than other social endeavours. And actually, that is a strength and a weakness. I mean, I have friends, for example, who have experienced deep depression who have actually used video games as a way of reopening themselves into social circles, you know, as opposed to vice versa.
That is a wonderful example of the potentially positive effect.
Yes.
Yes. When you play video games, you don't talk to anybody online.
Listen, I saw one video of his, and it was posted just a couple of years ago. I think it was like 3 years ago. And he makes a comment like, oh, video games are, you know, just video games, blah, 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 they're going to eat your children. I heard that they're making them in 3D now so that they'll be all around them. It was a comment like, oh, I mean, he was probably just talking about virtual reality, I'm assuming. But he didn't, like... Why are you attacking something and then you sound so misinformed? You know, like just, you know, you're not even referring to things correctly. You know, like he's, when you see the look on his face when they're describing, you know, when he's saying like, oh, but you know, but those aren't like, people aren't really there. Like you're not actually interacting with people. And even the reporter's like, well, actually you can talk to people. Can't you? It's not right. I think I'm right. Right. Like everybody knows this.
And even if you're playing a single-player game offline, like, say, Skyrim, the chances that you go on and interact with people about that game, you know, whether on forums or you talk with friends in real life or you chat about it with somebody through Facebook, is very, very high. So even if you're playing a game that would quote-unquote make you socially isolated, you're still using it most of the time to engage socially. And so, you know, he once again is pulling back into the shell of, oh, well, I'm only talking, you know, that's a very good point, but I'm only talking about this incredibly specific population, and I don't think you get it. And that's what I kind of keep hearing from him over and over, is that when he gets attacked, he goes into this cocoon of my population, I know what I'm talking about. But then when he talks in very broad strokes. And so it's this really weird duplicity that he has going on that makes it really frustrating to listen to, at least for me.
Yeah, and again, the whole argument about just, even if you were doing it all alone, even if you were playing Skyrim and you were the only guy that you knew that played Skyrim, and you don't like to do stuff online with it, like that's been happening forever with books and movies. And, you know, sometimes people don't watch the same thing you did. And yes, a big part of the internet is social, but not everybody's like that. And to say that that is where the worst... the biggest harm comes from just that person who does something. Again, he has all these theories about, like, I would say that the person is probably just enjoying it. He would say that they're being rewired by these industries that are just trying to get money, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, again, it's just like this blanket statement. Like, that person that is all alone doing this for a couple hours is... There's so much, like, that's why everything is going downhill. That's when shit hit the fan. That's when the men just stop being men.
Oh, I think I'm going to vomit a little bit. but thankfully, my buddy Andy, and he has a very interesting way of pronouncing his last name. His Twitter handle is actually the phonetic pronunciation of the name. So the thing is Pablushki. Because I know she says at the start of the show.
She says Shabilsky.
Shabilsky, okay. Well, it starts with a P-R-Y, so I don't know how you get out of that, but you know, I'm not going to judge. He's there, and he might as well be wearing a superhero cape that is both for gamers and researchers and psychologists.
And not only, even before he comes up, like the third gamer even brought up the idea, like, listen, like I know people who have been depressed, and playing video games, like, help them out. You know, like, they're giving all these positive examples of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he's... At least he acknowledged it, right? Zimbardo at least acknowledged it. He was like, yeah.
It's that linguistic trick of yes, but. of, I'm going to, in a very professional and academic way, agree with you and then simultaneously disagree with you and show that I am, that my thing is separate. That, yeah, what you said is right for what you're talking about, but I'm talking about something separate.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not.
Yeah. And Shabilsky, like I'm pretty sure I mentioned this before. I mentioned one of his studies before, one study that he published last year, where he talked about the amount of hours in a day. He references this later, but you know, the idea that certain amount of time playing, like, it just makes sense that after a certain amount of time during the day, you're like, it's taking up the time of other things, and if that's happening in your life, then that's a problem. But if it's not, then there's really like no effect. But anyway, yeah, let's see what Dr.
Bring on Andy.
Let's bring on Andy.
My new best buddy.
Andrew as well. Absolutely. Sorry. Yeah. Dr. Andrew Shabilsky, welcome to you from the Oxford Internet Institute. Hi. What do you think of what Dr. Philip Zimbardo is saying this morning?
Well, I think a lot of what Philip is sharing is pretty much common sense. There are definitely things that we should be keeping our eyes on when it comes to new technologies. But a lot of the critique could have just as easily been applied to rock music or comic books. There's really an issue of causation versus correlation. There might be some people who are predisposed to social isolation who might be playing games alone, but the causal evidence really is not there. We have about 25 years of brain research and large-scale research with young people, boys and girls, and the evidence really shows that the effects, for good or bad, are very, very small. We're talking 1% of a young person's well-being or functioning has anything to do with either social media or gaming.
Yeah, okay, I disagree with that. We have lots of data in our book, Man Disconnected, which challenges that view. And it's not like rock music or comic books. Video gaming is a multi-million dollar industry. Pornography is a multi-million dollar industry. So these are industries that have to attract consumers, and they're constantly making the games more enchanting, more fascinating.
Sorry, so Dr. Zimbardo, I would argue that the rock industry also tries to get people's attention, and so did Victorian novels.
Yeah.
The thing that's important to understand is that there are comprehensive reviews. This country has the Byron Report, which was a comprehensive review of all forms of media and young people. The Australian government has one, and these basically, while there are some exceptions, there is some data to indicate that there are some edge cases. When you look at the evidence comprehensively, this looks like part of modern childhood. Anything in excess, whether you're a sports fan or a video game fan, when it's not about the activity itself, when it's about something else complicated that's going on with a young person, then it can have some negative effects.
Yeah, I think you're underestimating the impact that these things are having right now on our youth. And I'm saying it's compounded with boys not having a father at home who sets standards, who sets limits. And I think most parents are unaware of the extent to which children are spending their time doing that video game.
Again, he's saying what, I mean, common sense, that excessive is excessive. And I think my favorite part of that, and I might make it the ringtone on my phone, is that video games are a part of normal childhood development now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just drop the mic and walk away, because this is the reality.
I mean, everything that Dr. Shabilsky said was on point, right? It was like, oh, okay, yeah, like logical, fantastic, perfect. And then Zimbardo's like drowning. Like, at this point, I feel bad for him, because he's like, it's a multi-million dollar industry and they're trying to get consumers.
But
everybody who listens has like, but that's everything.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Every industry.
Yeah, what industry doesn't want to have consumers? I mean, yes, the video game industry has pulled in more money than Hollywood in the last couple of years by quite a bit, but rock and roll within its context, or the radio, any of these things have always been trying to get consumers, and they've always been, oh no, our children, they're gonna be corrupted. But it's not a one-to-one, because, you know, video games are very different from, say, rock and roll or even television. But this idea that how video games can be analogous to pornography, but not to rock and roll, just does not compute in my head.
Well, and that specific argument is they're about making money and they're about attracting new customers.
Isn't
what
that...
the fuck, man? Everything, every industry is like
is,
that.
And plus, that? Plus
and this is really small, but it bothered me that just the fact that he said million instead of billions, like he's trying to vilify these industries and he doesn't even like accurately portray the size that they currently, you know, how big they actually are. Just something like that. Just again, it just sounds to me like he came up with this idea 30 years ago and he's set. Like he didn't have to read anything else or look into anything else. And he's just like developing this theory for 30 years in a lab somewhere. And then he wrote a book.
And I think one of the things that bothered me the most is, you know, he like you said, he said millions instead of billions. And you said that you almost felt bad for him at this point, that you're starting to feel like he's overmatched. I had a very opposite reaction because when he was talking, he used the phrase, well, in my book, and then he gave the book's title. That put me off so much, I didn't care. I mean, there is something that happens later, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, and I'm sure we'll get there, where I do start to almost feel bad for him. But he drops that, you know, my book, you know, Man Disconnected, and he repeats that like 3 or 4 times. He sounds like some kind of PR pony.
Yes. Is he out to get more customers and make money?
Oh! Oh, he must be like pornography then.
He is like pornography.
Oh, God, the visual. Oh, we can stop.
And when he pimps his book out at that moment, right, it is to go against what Shabulsky is saying regarding research, right? So,
I mean, when his response is, we have lots of research in this book.
My book is full of research. Well, we don't need your research. There's no other research that matters.
I would really hope that your book would be filled with research. Yeah, it's kind of like
my research matters. Yours doesn't.
It's kind of like those hotels that advertise, "Hey, we have TVs and no bed bugs." It makes you
think.
Okay, well, all right.
Oh,
bring on the next batch.
Zimbardo. Like I said, like at this point, I'm feeling like it's like an old man just like flailing at this point, right?
So you're feeling the compassion, and I'm thinking, burn it down.
No, I mean, I'm actually rooting for everybody that's kicking him while he's down, but I still feel kind of bad. But he's like a really old guy, like on the floor, just like, I'm all right. Boom. And then they hit him again. He's like, but I'm okay.
See, that's
how I see him.
It takes me a little bit while longer to get there.
How would you have reacted to like the way that Shabulsky just says, like, well, you know, I would argue that rock music also wants to attract customers, you know, like he was so cool about it. Like, oh yeah, like I'm on the BBC right now. I should act composed. At least a cup of water in his face, right? Something like that.
I don't want to waste good water.
Gotcha. All right.
And I'm saying it's compounded with boys not having a father at home who sets standards, who sets limits. And I think most parents are unaware of the extent to which children are spending their time doing the video game.
Well, Ofcom research in this country shows that at least parents in Great Britain are very well aware of a wide range of risks, and they use what are called mediation strategies, different ways of setting rules about time and content, and most feel empowered by what's going on right now. What you're highlighting are potential risks. So it might be the case that something has a negative effect, but the causal evidence is not there. Compared to something like poverty or mental health care access, real problems with young people, or things like self-injurious behavior or anorexia, which actually are on the rise with young people in this country, something like video games and the evidence base just isn't there.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so
are you accepting what he's
no,
saying?
No, I'm not accepting that at all. I'm saying now there may
well,
be
the Center
some,
for National
there may be
Statistics
some differences
and Ofcom
in the UK than in the
facts.
United States. We've studied obviously much more in depth in the United States.
Okay, so I think right here I have to kind of lend a huge round of applause to my buddy Andy, because he just so expertly deconstructed that. Personally, when I heard Zimbardo talk about, well, you know, there's a lack of fathers to have rules and boundaries, it makes me think mothers have rules and boundaries too. And so that
no,
that I would have probably gone
no,
off on
don't.
That.
They don't.
But, you know, he stays focused on the stuff that he can actually talk about, and that people, parents do know what their kids are playing and how they're playing it. And then the way that Zimbardo is just incredibly dismissive of him and is like, okay, well, anyway, it's this incredibly dismissive gesture. And this contributed to my, I don't feel sorry for him. I am very unhappy with him right now.
If you listen real closely on the part where Shabulsky says, oh, rock music and even Victorian novels.
You hear him say Victorian novels.
Yeah, Victorian.
Yeah. Or something like that. I'm like, what does that even?
Yeah.
You were around back then. Why are you marking it?
Come on, take it easy. Take it easy on him. Now, this part is where even the reporter checks in. It's like, wait a minute, like, you're not rebutting this. Like, are you, you accept what he's saying? You know, he didn't even know what to say. He was just like, well, whatever. And that was it. He just like, oh, it's just real professional, Zimbardo. Real cool. Real nice. Everybody's going to go out and buy that book now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. But we agree that mothers don't provide structure in.
No. You know, if dad's not in the picture, you know, the kids are just wild in the streets, you know, throwing bananas and stuff.
Oh, and then again, the best part of this particular segment was, you know, yeah, there is, you know, some evidence that maybe there's a potential risk there, but tons of things can provide risk, like poverty. You know, like, are you looking at these people's lives, you know, at these gamers' lives holistically, or are you just, you know, because you're just talking about one thing. And by throwing that comment in there, like, well, on top of everything else, remember, they don't have dads in the picture. And I'm guessing that's also video game and pornography's fault. But because they're not there, blah, 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 you know, and then it's like, listen, yeah, that could have an effect. But so can a lot of other things.
Yeah, stuff that's actually been proven, like poverty and mental health.
Again, even the whole, like, father not in the picture thing is so complicated and has so many other things attached to it. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
Again, just the fact that he's, like, catering to every single piece of just, like, the worst popular psychology possible, you know? It's like, here's a meme, and here's a meme, and here's this.
Well, what's really interesting is I'm on a listserv, and this video actually came up through that listserv, and Chris Ferguson, our buddy Chris, actually was talking, he described it as fear-mongering, mm-hmm. as, like, going for the specific nerves that are exposed surrounding video games, you know, our children, their health, their safety, their schoolwork, and just trying to push on each one of those fear buttons.
And any researcher who does that automatically loses credibility. Like, how can you possibly listen to somebody who is intentionally telling you, trying to alarm you, like, right out the gate?
Yeah, he doesn't sound like a scientist. And I think that's what that one, well, there's many things that bother me, but that is one of them, is that you are almost a figurehead in this field, which has always struggled to be recognized as an actual science. I have a brother-in-law who has his advanced degree in physics. And so if I were to ever refer to myself as a scientist or that I do science, he laughs at me. So, you know, the credibility is still something that we're fighting for, and that we do stuff in a well scientific method-y kind of way. And then you go out there talking like that, and it makes me really sad on the inside.
Yeah, and he could be a conservative politician. He could be a like a religious figure, you know, somebody at the head of a church or something. And these type of things, like, you're used to hearing them from there. This makes news because he is, again, like a living legend in the psychology world. And when he says something like that, it's completely different because his book is full of research.
Well, he's an authority. He's a scientist. He's got doctor in front of his name. If you can't trust that, then what can you trust? And I was worried after watching it the first time that, oh, no, this is going to set, you know, video game culture and research back, you know, at least half a decade, if not more. But everything that's come out since this was released on the 7th of May has been complete backlash against him. I have not seen anybody post anything on my gaming or my psych feeds in support of what he said and what he did. And that made me kind of relieved that, okay, I feel like if this had come out 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, this wouldn't have happened. But now the state of research on video games has come to a point where it's like they said, common sense and common knowledge that they're not destroying our children, which is kind of like a hallelujah moment.
And the, you know, the mainstream publications that tend to put research findings forward as news, you know, they can tweak that a little bit. And everything I saw was like, according to this guy, or they were opinion pieces reacting to it, you know, and they all had a hint of, and I don't think it was my bias, you know, like coming through when I was reading it. I mean, they seemed to be dismissive of what he was saying. Nobody just came out right out of ridicule. It was like, do you, like, this is what this guy is saying. And that was really interesting to see, because I was expecting to see a lot of just news outlets saying, this is what research says now.
Yeah, there's not any curb stomping. There's not name calling. It's, okay, well, here is a giant steaming pile of research. And that is what I am drawing from. And this is what I am presenting. And this is what most people think is true. You know, it's kind of like the climate change debate, where there's some very fervent anti-believers, but the larger scientific community is like, yeah, okay, this is a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so yeah. What's up next?
But there are recent studies of the brain. And to the extent that boys play in excess, there are studies Leonard Sachs has a book, Boys Adrift, and he reports on the negative effects on the brain, on the nucleus accumbens, on the reward center of the brain, of playing video games. That's not a correlation. That's a direct
impact. Well, no, it literally is a correlation, because there's not an experimental procedure. There's no evidence that there's an enduring change. I could show someone a picture of a naked woman. I could have someone fall asleep and wake up, and you would find differences in the brain, in many important brain regions. Yeah. This doesn't mean necessarily that we're looking at something different than a comic book, rap music, or pizza.
Pizza!
Mm-hmm.
Okay, pizza. Ah, oh, that's the highlight.
I mean, again, it's another slam dunk for our friend Andy. And, I mean, pointing out, I mean, kudos for using the word literally correctly, but pointing out that, no, you're throwing around words that are usually buzzwords, but this is what they actually mean. Yes, it is a correlation. You're finding that when you do this, this happens, but that doesn't mean that one causes the other. Because you could show a person a picture of pizza, and of course the brain is going to change. Listening to this podcast, your brain is changing. The different structures and formations of the brains are constantly in flux, and building and reshaping and pruning and finding new connections. And the nuclear accumbens, to his credit, is involved in reward. But it's also involved in motor planning and decision making. Like, you can't just say, oh, the nucleus accumbens does this.
Didn't he say it's like, there's like damage done to it by playing video games? Isn't that what he said?
He says there's a change in the formation.
Okay. I thought he used the word damage.
We'll have to go back and take a listen.
Let me go back real
quick.
Leonard Sachs has a book, Boys Adrift, and he reports on, the negative effects on the brain, on the nucleus accumbens, on the reward center of the brain, of playing video games.
So he says negative effects. Okay, so he doesn't just say that there's a reaction. He says that there are negative effects. Damage was my word. Oh, sorry. But negative effects.
And
yeah, go for it.
Well, I should say, this is the part where I almost start to feel bad for him. Because he's stuttering, he's having trouble finding his words, he seems really off balance. And when he's talking about his research, it takes him a really long time to even come up with a name of somebody to cite. Because up until this point, it's just been the research we did or research says, whereas Andy is talking about, boom, here's the study in this author. Boom, here's the study in this author. And I feel like this is the point where it really starts to become apparent just how out of touch and how maybe unprepared he was for this kind of conversation.
To his defense, I can never remember researchers' names or like parts of their brain. Like, I blank whenever I need that information. But like isn't like the worst thing that can happen to you as a researcher is when you like put out causation and then it obviously isn't? Isn't that just like, if you had any credibility left after this interview, like that's the last straw. Is there a bigger sin?
Well, to me, talking about something as a researcher that you obviously do not know enough about, like if you're going to talk about parts of the brain, you better be able to talk about parts of the brain if you're using that as the foundation for your argument. You know, that to me kind of like, okay, Zimbardo, you are not a neuroscientist. Neither am I, and I would never pretend to be one. So I'm not going to cite research that I can't explain or that I can't, you know, I at least know what that part of the brain does. And I mean, I know, again, I guess in his defense, it's a short show. You've got to say as much as you can in a little time. There's not a whole lot of time to dig into stuff. But between the stuttering, the inability to actually come up with appropriate citations or resources, and at this point, even just putting a comprehensive sentence together, again, the number one feeling I get right now, instead of being upset or angry or confused or surprised, is kind of sorry for him because he was not ready for what hit him.
Can I ask Julian and Sam and Nick here, the age you began going online and playing stuff and how many hours you spent as a teenager and how many hours you spend now?
This is, I guess, probably the key question where we demonstrate that actually gaming is all about, you know, moderation and finding it as something that takes a place in your life. I mean, for me, you know, and the same with Julian and Sam, you know, gaming isn't the be-all and end-all of our lives. So actually, when you ask how much do we play, it will vary depending on week. We have jobs, we have other hobbies, and therefore...
This week, for example, this week
I've had no internet and no computer because I've been moving flat, so actually it's been none at all. So that's a poor example.
Last week
maybe kind of 3 to 4 hours or so. Other times it could be, you know, it could be 20 hours. You never know.
Sure.
It's entirely dependent on where it fits into your life,
and
the same as any other
social
activity.
In terms of you, would you acknowledge any particular negative impact on you if you spent 20 hours on it?
I mean, to be honest, I'm not talking about back-to-back. We're talking about
total over a week, yeah.
That would be making up for a time where, you know, you might not have other things on. You might be, you know, it's towards the end and you haven't hit payday yet and you don't particularly want to go out and spend, you know, £5 a pint in the pub and you've got, you know, a load of games sitting at home and you've got an easy way of socialising with friends across nations.
Can I ask, as when you were teenagers, did your parents worry about the time you were online?
Not so much online, actually, on the system itself. I mean, we went through a phase, not a phase, but so maybe a lot of children went through this, where your parents would, like, kind of ban you for a bit.
Yeah, and so then, I'm in that phase. Yeah.
And basically, I might have experienced that as well.
Yeah, isn't it, if we spent too much time on it in a particular time or we're up too late when they told us not to be, they'd say, all right, you can't play for 2 or 3 days, and then we'd be, like, not really upset, you know. We'd find other things to do, but then it wasn't, like, a huge problem.
But how would they know how much you were playing?
We'd be in a room, and there's only one thing you'd probably be doing in a certain room with the games console and the TV.
We don't need to comment on any of that stuff, right?
I mean, I guess the only thing I would want to say on that, and again, if you decide not to use it, then just cut it.
No, go for it.
Was that the reporter is digging. She's trying to find some kind of example or fact that would let her categorize gamers. Like, she's asking these three to speak for all gamers. And when they're talking about, well, it varies and it's different and it depends on the day and, you know, we're not all the same. It's like she tried to come at that question from 5 different angles and got blocked each time. And I feel like that's something that either psychologists or reporters or anybody trying to study games and gamers, they try to do. They try to create the standardized experience when it doesn't exist. It can't exist.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Your dissertation had a lot to do with that, right? Where it's like self-report and you know, sometimes that's accurate, it's not accurate, but it's definitely not consistent, you know, in most people. And like the guy said, he's like, you know, like, I'm a grown man. Last week I couldn't play. I didn't have a chance, but sometimes you have more free time.
Or when he talks about, I don't know whether in the last clip or in the upcoming one, 20 hours, and she asks him, well, what was the effect of that? And his response is, well, it wasn't all at once. I mean, it's accumulated over a week. And it just gave me flashbacks to, again, my dissertation and looking at all these studies that have people self-report how often they play on a weekly or monthly basis. You know, you need to, if you're going to do it, you need to look at what people are doing every single day, because it is such a varied experience based on what game is out and what is going on in matchmaking and what's going on in your life and what is it finals, is it not? Like, there's no standard. And I'm so proud of those guys for standing up for that and refusing to be cookie cuttered.
Yeah. And that one moment when Zimbardo asks, like, how did your parents know you were playing? That was... that was such a weird question. And the guy responds again, like he's put on the spot and he's like he doesn't understand the question. He's like, well, what else was it? Like, I was a kid in my room where there was nothing but a TV and a gaming console.
Porn. Like, I was doing porn.
Well, he even mentioned, like, I wasn't online. I just had a console. Like, this is the guy seems pretty young. Yeah. And if you're looking back when he was a kid, like, yeah, not everybody had internet. Or maybe you had internet on one computer at home. You know, it wasn't like today.
Just the idea that, well, I talked with my parents or my parents were involved in my life.
Yeah, like they knew I was in the house. They knew I was in my room.
Yeah, there's this weird kind of assumption that I feel that's coming across is, well, if you're playing video games, then your parents must not know about it.
Yeah.
Which is not true at all. At least not anymore. I mean, it might have been at some point, and there are clueless parents, but...
Oh, absolutely.
Most parents at least know how much you're playing, if not exactly what you're playing.
And what was Zimbardo's point with the question?
Maybe genuine curiosity because he doesn't know.
Maybe. Like,
I don't know.
I've never thought about how parents could possibly know you were playing games.
I honestly think it was trying to be like a gotcha question of, well, you know, he's trying to show, well, parents don't know what's going on. So how did they track you? Oh, they couldn't. And then being surprised with the response.
It's Andrew, do come in.
Yeah, so what's most important here is that the lines of communication stay open between young people and parents.
Yeah.
So that parents can explain why a rule is important and maybe sit down and play games with their young person.
Yeah.
Our work indicates that more than half of British parents and somewhere around 33% of American parents actually play video games with their under 18s. And so this can really offer, it's not just about the negatives, this can offer a collaborative, positive experience that can move its way into the classroom, even. And so you really have to ask, are there hard and fast rules? Are we just talking about turning it off and trying to put the genie back in the bottle? Or are we talking about productive solutions that kind of understand that this is part of modern childhood?
Okay.
Now, that I agree with. In our book, we have solutions. And this, what he just said, what Andrew just said is part of what we see as a solution for parents. So we say, what do parents have to do? What do the media have to do to change the image of men? And what do schools have to do?
Okay, so what is his goal then? Is his goal to change the image of men? Like, isn't that what he just said? What is his goal? What is he trying to do? I thought he was talking about, like, video games being a problem, but is he trying to change what a man... What?
The impression I get is he believes the current image of men in modern society with the effect of video games, pornography, and absent fathers is not the right vision of men. He frequently, in this episode, or this broadcast... and articles and interviews that he's done previously, makes it very clear that his idea of masculinity is based in, like, the 1940s and the 1950s. He reminds me of one of those creepy grandpas who likes to walk down the street and pinch a girl's butt and wink at her and call her toots. You know, he pines for the day when that was a totally normal thing. And that's what I think he's getting at with this is, you know... men today aren't men. We need to redefine what it means to be a man because we've forgotten. As a man, how does that make you feel?
Again, I said that at the beginning. It is just, it is, oh man. And that's why I stopped it here. Cause this is the part where like, it's like one thing after another. So that part again, like what is your goal, man? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? And when you frame it that way, like, oh, but you actually, you described it perfectly.
It's okay. His upcoming statement will send me into rage.
This was for you, Kelly.
Thank you.
One of the problems we see, which is confusing, is schools are now, at least in America, for girls. Girls are doing better than ever. Girls are on the rise. But 9 out of 10 school teachers in primary school are women. And what we show is there's data that they have a bias against boys. That the kind of things that women teachers promote are the fine-tuning that girls do. And when teachers evaluate, let's say, essays anonymously, boys' scores go up by 30%.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Hey, Kelly, schools are for girls.
No, schools are not for girls. Schools have been hostily taken over by women and are being used as incubators to make other women smart while crushing the men because it is misandry. I mean, jeez, and why? Let's ask the question. Why are the majority of school teachers female? Because of the societal idea that women are responsible for taking care of children. That is the impetus behind it. Not to mention that, you know, if you're going to have a mom and a dad and a family, and one of them takes a low-paying job like school teacher, which has almost no benefits and very little pay, you know, a guy can probably have an easier time getting a job that makes more money because, oh, wait, men make more money than women do by like 3/4. So this idea that women are inherently sexist, no, women can't be sexist against men. That would mean I don't know what the word sexist means. That women are misandrist against men, that adult women are intentionally harming boys is absurd. And what I want to know is, what was he talking about with female teachers teach female students, they fine tune? I have no idea what that means. I never took shop, so I never tuned anything. Maybe in band. I did tune in band, but I had a male teacher. All male teachers in band. So I don't know. I have no clue what he is talking about in terms of women teachers tuning, quote unquote, girls in their classrooms. And the idea that somehow women doing well in school is a bad thing? Like the fact that he's framing it that women and girls doing well in school means that men are failing.
Yeah, that makes
me incredibly angry. Yeah.
So he said so much in so few words. So right out of the gate, schools are for girls. What the fuck, right? What does that even mean? Now, he could have said boys are at a disadvantage, but no, he said, listen, women, like, they don't like boys, okay? Most of the teachers are female, and listen, there's a thing that happened that proved what I'm about to tell you. And it's that whenever a boy writes an essay and a girl writes an essay, the boys, if they know that they're boys, they'll score them 30% less. So they're at a disadvantage in the schools. But that's not what he said. He said schools are for girls. Why would he frame it that way? Why would he make it look like, you said it perfectly, like, are they failing or are they just at some sort of slight disadvantage? Are you not taking into consideration the actual, like, employment landscape, equality in terms of, pay, like pay equality and things like that? And yeah, like I was a school teacher and that job just sucks. Okay. And there's like, I don't know if I mentioned this before, when I used to have my private practice, I gave an education discount because I could recognize how horrible of a profession that can be. And there's a million different reasons why you might be angry or you might hate your kids in general, or maybe some boys in particular. Okay. But like, well, just to say like a blanket statement of like, yeah, like boys are screwed because the majority of teachers are women. And whenever a boy like has to get graded, they are screwed.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't see any men presidents and you don't see men heading up 98% of successful companies, and you just don't see men in the workforce. And you, because they're always just so disenfranchised. Gosh, it's so hard to be a man.
And what does that have to do with the games and the pornography?
I think it goes to this idea that today's men are not men, according to him. And so that's where it's feeding in, is that not only are they up against these things, I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around it as well, but it's the idea that men are no longer men, because men used to dominate school and they used to dominate academics and they used to dominate everything. And now women have this equality thing and that makes us weak. And he actually said that in one of his articles that he did. He did an interview with The Guardian and they found him after one of his presentations, actually. And he legitimately said that life is harder. And I'm quoting this: life is harder for men because women are now equal to men.
Poor men. Poor, poor men.
He maintained that women are becoming equivalent to men and in some cases outperforming them, and said that this was a bad thing.
See, and then it's like, Are you trying to say that it's because of the gaming and the porn and the overexcitement that they, like, are in a situation that they're in and that's why it's a bad thing? Or, like, what it really sounds like is, listen, everybody. Porn and video games are rewiring your boys' brains. And on top of that, look at how bad the situation is for them. That the fathers aren't present and the schools aren't for them. They're for the girls. They're disadvantaged at every step of the way.
Yeah, these radical feminists and misandrists everywhere, you know? And the reason there aren't fathers in the home? I'm sure it's the mother's fault. But yeah, just kind of this last piece I want to quote. So he was asked on how women can help prevent the demise of guys. So based on his TED Talk, and he said, and I quote, "There is a need for hardened men. We will always need rough men to stand the walls and tend the land." Is this the 1800s? Like, what? What century is he from? It's not this one. And again,
I know, so many thoughts.
I sent so a DM feelings. Over Twitter to Josue earlier saying, as a gamer, as a woman, and as a feminist, I am horrifically offended.
So I'm offended too, as a gamer, as a man, and as a
feminist
professional. Well, yeah. Not
you
only,
are
like,
a feminist, sir.
Yes. But I mean, but in general, the largest indignation here is, like, he doesn't offend me as a feminist. Like, he's just like. He's absurd. He's an absurd man.
That
but
means you're a feminist. Stop fighting
yes,
it.
Yes.
Stop
well, fighting I'm saying, it. I'm saying he doesn't offend me.
He does offend your feminist sensibilities, because what you think he's saying about women as inequality is bullshit. But what you're saying, what I'm getting is what you're saying is that the thing that struck you the most was his lack of professionalism.
Yeah. Where I identify with him is the again, where he's a guy. He's not a gamer, right? But he does attack them enough where it's like, damn it, really? I should be offended as a teacher, too. But mostly, again, as this idea that he is supposedly representing us. He is an authority, you know. He is supposedly out in front of us, you know? Because, like, he is one of us, supposedly. And that bothers me. That disgusts me. And what else can I do to, like, make sure that we're not associated in any way?
I mean, the fact that someone can think, hey, this guy's a psychologist, and he is incredibly out of touch and bashing video games with absolutely nothing to back him up. Huh. Kelly has a doctorate in psychology, and Josue has a master's in psychology. I wonder if they also think that video games are bad for us, and they are also so poorly misinformed. The answer is no, so don't even think it.
And then, again, the sad part is how many... If you look at all the articles that are actually referring to the video, they don't mention Chbilski. Most of them don't. Because what matters is what Zimbardo said. Because, again, he's an authority. He's Zimbardo.
Well, I now follow Chbilski. I'm so sorry. I'm going to get his name wrong.
I'm so sorry.
Andy. I'm now following
because,
Andy.
Because, yeah, we have butchered your name so much, and I know you're used to it. I can relate to that, and I'm so sorry because I hate it when it's sent to me. But I tried. I didn't go the Andy route. I tried to go Chbilski. I'm sorry. I tried, but I know I didn't get it right every time. All right, I'm done. That's my apology.
Yep. Yes, thank you to Andy for standing up and for just, I mean, because I think about the idea of standing up to somebody like Philip Zimbardo, that would be intimidating. At least for me, I'll own that. That would be intimidating. But at no point did he ever, there was one point when he got a little bit snarky, and I'm not going to lie, I kind of liked it.
The rock and roll part.
Well, no, not even that. I don't remember. The camera's on Zimbardo, and he was talking, and you could hear Buddy Andy there talking about, well, the office of such and such has their own statistics.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, burn. But, I mean, you can only do so much, but he was professional. He had the research. He was eloquent. He shot down the crap that was coming his way, and it didn't matter that it was coming from, you know, one of the most famous psychologists, you know, of all time. So kudos to you, sir. Major thumbs up.
I feel better now. Do you feel better?
I do. I feel like we've processed and we've kind of gone through this, and that maybe I will be able to sleep tonight without a rage-induced coma.
Ooh, I hope we don't regret anything we've said here.
I know, I'm so scared. So when you go through an edit, you know.
Yeah.
Don't worry about being too conservative.
Yeah. I said what the fuck at least twice.
Yeah, I did. I don't remember. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, this is a podcast. This is something we do because we're passionate about the topic. We're passionate about the subject. We're not necessarily representing our, well, neither of us have a profession that we're representing.
But actually to this point, this is like, we couldn't not talk about this, at least even just like, we couldn't not talk about it in this avenue because this is what we do. This is what we talk about. Like, if we're not here, if we're doing a talk or anything, or we're writing something, it has to do with this very topic. And you made that comment that when you saw this, you were afraid that it would set things back a couple years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, this is the type of negative noise that we haven't been hearing lately. And it has to be somebody like Zimbardo to actually make any ripples, you know, because it's such a, again, antiquated, just weird, weird old stuff, you know, people don't take seriously anymore. And because of all the years of research that we have, that's, you know, are contrary to that. So it was interesting to have this come out, but like if somebody were to come out with something like this who was just like a recent graduate, it wouldn't make as much noise as it's making.
Oh no, absolutely not.
Yeah. So it's our duty to respond and talk about this. And we'll be talking about this thing for a while, you know?
Yeah, we'll see what comes of it, but you know, at the end of the day, this is our podcast and these are our beliefs and our opinions, and you know, I'm a strong believer in you have to get the science to people. I actually had a really interesting conversation with one of my game design friends about how she saw this really cool article about cell design or something, but it was presented in such a dry, sterile, science-y way that she just couldn't read it. Like, she wanted to, she was interested, but she just couldn't do it. So, you know, we keep it casual, we try to keep it, I don't want to say semi-professional. You know, the research is there, we back up what we say. But this is the discussion that needs to happen. And I think people need to know that, you know, you're only as good as the research you're currently doing. And you've got to stay on top of it. Your name won't carry you. And especially in this generation where, you know, we're skeptical. And that's what we're trained to do, is to be skeptical.
Yep. Zimbardo. What went wrong? The world changes around him. That's what happened.
It's what it feels like. He yeah. feels out of time.
Yeah.
He just got plunked here from the past.
Poor guy. See, I do feel kind of bad for him.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, again, wrap up the emotional. I think his research was very misguided and not well informed. And I did feel like he was on there just to promote his book, not necessarily to have a meaningful or thoughtful discussion about the topic, as opposed to just, you know, hey, my book's out. Let's get some press on it. But on the upside, it gave us this conversation to talk about. And we got to see Andy rock it. So go Andy.
So just to finish up, we completely spliced that interview, but we presented most of it in order. But absolutely go check it out and see for yourself what he's saying, and you know, make your own opinion. And even I probably won't read his book. It doesn't matter how curious I am. But he mentions the book in the video. You can check that out to see where he's coming from. And
you also want to watch the TED Talk that he did. We'll link it to the show notes because that's a really good kind of primer on where this started 3 years ago.
Absolutely. Yep. And we'll put Andrew Shabilsky's Twitter handle in the notes too, just so you can follow him because he's cool.
Yes, because you should go follow him right now.
Yep.
And tell him Psychotech sent you.
Yes. And to find those show notes and past episodes and information about how to reach us, you can visit psychtechpodcast.com and absolutely follow us on Twitter at psychtechcast. Let us know. I still have a lot to say about all this stuff. And like I said, we'll be talking about this for a long, long time. Thanks, Zimbardo.
But we got some of the decompression, we got to process it and kind of let it out. And again, just to reemphasize what Josue said, go watch the video. We encourage you to make your own perceptions, your own decisions, your own thoughts about it. And then we'd love to hear what you thought about the presentation and whether you agree with us or disagree with us. Definitely want to hear that conversation.
Absolutely. All right. See you next week, Kelly.
See you this way.